Welcome to Harlow on Healthcare. I'm David Harlow, and I invite you to join me by my virtual hearth as I sit down with healthcare leaders to discuss building the future of healthcare. Today, my guest is Larry Thompson, Chief Strategy Officer of Advanced Medical Pricing Solutions, or AMPS, offering healthcare cost containment services to self-insured employers and others. He's also a past chairman of the Self-Insurance Institute of America. Welcome, Larry, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, David.
A pleasure. So, well, healthcare cost containment services must have folks lining up at your door, Larry. How do you explain the services that your company provides? And tell us a little bit about your typical client, if there is such a thing.
Well, I wouldn't say folks are lining up at our door, David, but our growth has been very, very significant, and the space is reflective of what employers want to see with healthcare. So clearly there is a desire by self-funded employers to manage healthcare costs because they've been rising out of control for quite some time. As far as our typical customer, anyone that is self-funded are our primary customers. So that's about, of the 156 million Americans that are privately insured, about 94 million or 61% are self-funded. So that's our primary market. But our cost containment services are also being utilized by insured entities as well, particularly our medical bill review services. So our range of customers is pretty broad.
I see. So tell us a little bit more about that. Medical bill review services, what does that mean?
Well, actually, Advanced Medical Pricing Solutions started as a medical review company some 15 plus years ago. And the concept was very simple. Over 93% of all hospital bills have an error on them, according to the most recent studies. That's also backed up, by the way, by CMS. So basically, 9 out of 10 bills that you get from a hospital are going to have an error in them. When we started working on it, it was primarily to try and see if we could save employers money by correcting those errors. As we got further into it, we recognized that the errors fell into many different buckets. So the first or top section is actual just raw billing errors, where you bill for something and it was not done correctly, or you duplicated something, 2 MRIs for the person while they were in the hospital, as an example. But then we recognized that there were also clinical errors. So over time, we began employing physicians to help us to look at those clinical issues. Today, we employ over 25 physicians in a variety of specialties that look at all of the clinical pieces of our medical bill review. Now, what we do there is follow standard protocols, the best protocols for treatment, and also make sure that we're looking for any clinical errors. For example, a 30-year-old male being scheduled for a hysterectomy. So we go through that process, and between all of those functions, we generally save between 7 and 12% off of all the inpatient hospital bills that we see without involving the patient, without any negotiation on price.
And then I imagine there's a whole other part of the package which does involve negotiating on price and does involve other sorts of reviews as well. Is that correct?
That is correct. It's referred to in the industry broadly as reference-based pricing.
Yes.
Because it comes from the terminology of using certain other references to price medical care fairly. And we use a lot of reference sources. But what we aim for is not just to drive price down. Our objective is to have a fair price for all, which means providers aren't underpaid and patients aren't overcharged. That sounds simple, but it really isn't. It's very complicated to do. It varies a lot across the country. It varies by the type of medical care that one gets. On average, we are saving our clients about 70% off of their typical billed charges when we use our reference-based pricing models. Now, there are many factors to that, as I said. Some involve negotiation. Some involved us having pricing tools and technology that allows us to know what the pricing standards are in a particular zip code or area and a particular specialty. We're a very data-driven company, so we possess one of the largest pricing databases in the country because we've maintained 15 years of that data nationwide doing our medical bill review, and then in the last 7.5 years doing reference-based pricing. The data warehouse that we now have affords us a tremendous amount of truly practical data that we can use in working with providers to establish fair pricing for patients.
Right. I was going to ask you about sort of as everything in healthcare has been moving online, whether that's made your life easier. But it sounds like in addition to being able to source data online, for example, CMS has a tremendous amount of data that can be made available. It sounds like you've built your own data store over time. And I imagine you're using both your historical data plus other data sets that you now have access to in tandem in some way.
That's correct. And actually, we've built AI into our system so that we're able to look at that pricing data and be able to pull from a tremendous number of sources, not the least of which is our own database, Medicare pricing, CMS data, prevailing cost data, UCR, lots of other things that we utilize, hospital charge masters, and PPO data that we've established. So we use all that, and then we use our system to come up with median or fair pricing for procedures based upon three-digit zip codes throughout the country. So yes, technology, we're a very strong technology-driven company, and we think our platform is one of the most sophisticated in the industry.
Okay. So we've talked a little bit about reference-based pricing. We've talked about medical bill review. And are there other areas of services that you have in the collection here, other arrows in the quiver, so to speak?
Yes, there are. I think probably our most important service is our advocacy service. When you look at reference-based pricing, like any new in this industry vertical, we have a lot of black eyes, and there's a lot of false statements that are made about reference-based pricing. People tend to think that the member abrasion is tremendous and that the number of balanced bills that people get are tremendous. And that actually is not factual. In our case, we generally see about 3.5% of our patients and members that will get a balance bill. And after our advocacy team is engaged, that goes down to less than 0.1%. So it really is a very small number that we ever get into serious negotiation on. And by the way, we have not gone to court on any of these. We've always negotiated a fair price somewhere in that process so that the patient does not have a credit ding. So advocacy and the way we handle advocacy, I think, is one of our special services. So we start before a patient ever goes to see a provider by explaining the process, how we do it, how it works, by giving them contact info so that they can reach out to us if they have any questions. We have an entire care navigation system that has scoring of quality and friendliness for pricing of millions of doctors throughout the country so that we can steer all patients to high quality providers at the best cost in the markets they're in. But we also then are there to provide help should there be a denial of service or be a balanced billing. And that advocacy piece of our business is where we have a large portion of our employment base. They're highly trained specialists that utilize our technology to assist our members along the way.
So if I were an employer and I've historically just worked with one of my commercial health insurers and keyed into one of their PPO plans, but not on an insured basis, on a self-insured basis, does this mean that I'm essentially, in working with you, substituting out their network for your PPO network, so to speak?
You could. So there are many different ways employers work with us. Some start out, as I like to call it, with training wheels, where they'll do a dual option, particularly larger employers, where they'll say, we're going to offer a reference-based pricing plan and we're going to offer a PPO plan. There's obviously a significant difference in the employee contribution because the claims at the reference-based pricing side are considerably lower than the claims on a PPO. So the HR department does that appropriately. And generally what we see is that in the first year, the signups are pretty aggressive, but by the second year, most employers start to see that the savings is significant, the member operation is very little, and then they'll go to a full replacement, which is the second, if you will, form, which is exactly what you described, where we would take over and replace their PPO network completely. But you should understand that there is another product kind of underneath all of this that we have, and it's called our Care Connects product. And that product is what we refer to as our safe harbor, if you will. And that's where we have providers all across the country that have actually contracted with us or contracted with one of our bundling services to provide strong pricing so that there is no balance billing of any kind. And we use a combination of those two things together to be able to deliver a very wide range of providers to replace a typical, you know, PPO network.
Now, like where I'm located in the Boston area, does joining up and accessing your network mean that we're leaving half of the academic medical centers out on the curb, or all of them, or how does that work in a high cost market like mine?
Well, the realities are that we don't call it a network because it really isn't. We don't do credentialing and we don't actually do formal contracting the way a PPO does. We have pricing arrangements with them. But our primary product is really the reference-based piece. So the answer to your question is you'd be surprised at how many academic institutions actually accept fair reference-based pricing. And so in the Boston area, we do have a number of providers and academic-based providers that have and will continue to accept fair reference-based pricing.
If you're just tuning in, this is Harlow on Healthcare, coming to you on Healthcare Now Radio. I'm David Harlow, and my guest today is Larry Thompson, Chief Strategy Officer of AMPS. Larry, is there some inflection point in history that you could point to, or some key change over time that maybe has led to the current state of affairs with healthcare costs approaching 20% of GDP, with a rising tide of waste, fraud, and abuse, some rise of high deductible health plans, rise of increased costs at the bottom line to individuals around the country? Is there something or set of things that you see as sort of having led us into this current state of affairs?
Well, David, I've been doing this for 41 years, and about 3 years into it, when I was a very young man, I recognized that the challenge for the healthcare industry was managing costs. We created a system that was transaction-based, and had incentives for providers to be producing more transactions to get paid more. The incentives were misaligned. And by the time we recognized what was there, I think we had an entrenched set of players in the marketplace that it was very difficult to unseat. And so what has happened, I think, and the inflection point we have gotten to is that we just continue to see healthcare prices rise and rise. The first thing we tried to do was cost shifting between government plans and private sector. Mm-hmm. That got to its maximum. And then we went to our second cost shifting procedure, which was to start shifting costs between the employer and the member. And I would say we're getting pretty close to being at the top of that hill, as most studies are now showing that folks are spending, a family is spending close to 31% of their income on their health insurance premiums and health care spending. So we focused on that and tried to do the shifting. We also focused on access. And I like to say ACA was primarily about access. I'm not sure the problem was as severe as we thought it was, but we have brought 20 million new people into the system, and I think that's excellent. But now we recognize the 28 million people that are still not covered are sitting out there primarily because of cost. And cost, when we look into it, is not what most people think it is. The 80 to 85% of every healthcare premium dollar, whether it's self-funded or a contribution through a fully insured plan, is because of the claim cost. So we've focused a lot of energy in this country on the 15% of the pie, when the 85% of the pie has gone pretty much untethered. And finally, we are starting to pay attention to the 85%. And that's where AMPS is focused. And I think that's where we're starting to see legislation, both on a state and federal basis, starting to pay attention.
And what do you see as some bright points in the sort of the legislative landscape these days?
I think we're going to see some legislation on surprise billing. I think we're going to see continued state legislation in more progressive states that's moving towards better transparency. I think the executive order by the current administration trying to get further transparency into hospital billing, while being challenged, obviously, with a lawsuit, is on the right track. I think that you cannot bring consumerism to healthcare until we can provide transparency. The American people are the greatest consumers on the planet. And if we're able to take this largest industry in our country and let consumerism enter it, we will see a natural drive towards a lower cost without the scare tactics of the lower quality that people are afraid of.
Right. I would tend to agree. Lack of transparency is a real barrier there. Interesting that you mentioned surprise billing. That was something that I'd wanted to ask you about. We hear a lot about that these days. And I'm wondering if, on balance, it is as big a problem as it's made out to be. Obviously, I understand it's a big problem if I myself am hit with a big surprise bill, whether it's, you know, anesthesia or some other unexpected cost. But systemically, do you see that as a significant problem overall?
I think surprise billing is a smaller percentage of the medical bankruptcy that's happening in our country than people know. Mm-hmm. That said, it is a problem, obviously, and it is something that we should address. We obviously circumvent that problem because the way that we operate with the pricing models that we have, there are no surprise bills.
Right.
So that's a pleasant part of what we do.
Yeah.
But no question, we do have to address it. But I don't think on its own that it's going to change drastically. the medical bankruptcy rates that we're seeing in the country. I think those will continue because we are spending, the average family is spending too much money on healthcare, period.
So is there some other particular pain point that you would want to address instead of surprise billing that would give us more bang for the buck, so to speak, help more people, solve more problems?
Yes, I think if we could publicize or socialize the real cost of medical procedures and of drugs, that would help, because then consumers can make choices based upon their needs and based upon true costs. The problem we face today is that most hospital systems will not release that information. And if they do, it's generally bill charges. And as we all know, those can be a moving target. The PPO networks are not much better. They're not releasing that data either. They're not going to let us know what they've negotiated at, although in our technology, we've been able to do that reverse engineering, and we have a pretty good idea of where all of them are. So I think cost data is really a big piece of it, and if we could publish that, be great. I think particularly in the pharmaceutical area, this is a very big problem. I think, you know, we are looking at legislation currently to make significant changes in the pharmaceutical piece of this process. You know, it's going to account for 20% of our healthcare spend by next year. Specialty drugs driving a great deal of that. But the rebate situation with PBMs has truly gotten out of hand. And I think that needs to have some daylight shone upon it so that we can really get to the true cost of what we're paying for pharmaceuticals.
I've been reading a biography of John D. Rockefeller. One of the issues in sort of the early days of his business empire building was rebates for freight, sort of obscurantism in pricing in deals between railroads and oil companies. And it's of the same ilk, what we're looking at today in terms of rebates with pharma. Going back to sort of the markets that you serve, I'm wondering, is it easier for you to help a large company or a small company, one with employees in many different locations around the country, or one, you know, with a single office? Does that matter, or does the network that you've, or not network per se, but the contracts and agreements that you have in place allow you to serve either equally well?
I think we can serve either. You know, we have a lot of customers that are, you know, 100 lives or even less, you know, with employees. And then we have, you know, very large customers with 80,000 people around the country that we serve. So that's the nice part about our data-driven and technology-driven platform and our massive data warehouse is that we truly have a national footprint and we can work with providers in all segments of the country.
Larry, we're getting to the end of our time, and I'll end with the question that I ask everybody on this podcast, which is, if you were to wake up tomorrow and find yourself 5 years in the future, what is one thing in healthcare that you would hope or expect to find has changed drastically?
I would hope that there would be readily available internet access to all medical pricing in the U.S., along with true quality statistics, so that consumers could decide for themselves where to get the best care at the fair price. That would be my hope. And that technology is available today, but I would hope that the entrenched parties that have the transactional system and that have the majority of covered private sector lives would change or will be forced to change, and that the government itself will do the same on their Medicare and Medicaid programs.
Well, that's quite the call to the barricades, Larry. Well,
it is.
We'll follow this closely. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, David. Thank you for having me.
You have been listening to Harlow on Healthcare. Join us at healthcarenowradio.com. Let's continue the conversation on building the future of healthcare together at #HarlowOnHC. I'm David Harlow, keeping the fire going and holding a seat open for you. Until next time.